Good morning, everybody. This is Fred Meissner with the June 10th, 2010 Fred Report Technical Market Call. I want to welcome everyone to the call. Looks like a busy day out there today, so we're going to get right into it. And so we'll start off with the stock market. I guess the first thing to say is, looking at the daily indicators, we definitely have a lot of bottoming signs. But when I look at those weekly indicators and monthly indicators, I still see the possibility for a little bit of rally and then some more pull down. I'm still sticking with my idea that the big move in this market up is going to occur after a few more weeks to a month or so of choppiness and erratic behavior. Yesterday was exactly the kind of action you get in one of these one-step forward, two-step backs market, where you do get rally to reduce the short-term oversold condition, and then that rally fades. So if I were an investor here, I would be accumulating some stock positions with the idea being that we're going to be fully invested by the time those daily moving averages cross, which I think is going to be sometime after June and into July for a nice up move. But in the meantime, we still do have some downside risk. One of the things that I do note here is that I keep seeing in the papers and hearing from technical commentary around the street that we simply cannot break the 1040 area on the S&P 500. That's the SPX index. What that tells me is we have an excellent chance of breaking 1040, at least for a while. I don't see, and again, the way I derive this figure is by actually entering the number in my monthly Fred's Price Loss Oscillator spreadsheet. I do not see a monthly close below 95 on the Spider, which is 950 on the S&P, without an intervening rally first. I don't think we're going to get down that far, but I do think we're going to break 1040 on the S&P 500. I think there's real risk of that, and I think that's actually going to be a buying opportunity when we do it. So my feeling is you can certainly be adding stocks here, but looking to really become more aggressive when the S&P gets below 1040. The tone of the market's decent. Short interest is up. We're seeing indicators start to turn up and stuff, but I'm still just a little tiny bit leery of things. I would also comment, by the way, we're seeing the mid-cap index still is outperforming the S&P. All that's good. The transports are still performing well. One of the kickers to yesterday was that the Dow and the S&P were down, but the transports were up. So we're seeing leadership and positive economic type stuff working. We're seeing people fleeing into the S&P 500 stocks and the smaller stocks going down, which is what you normally see when you start a big bear market. But I just think we have a little more chop here, and with that, we'll move on to the bond markets. We noted in the monthly report that the TLT, which is Treasury bonds, are forming what could be a big top in the 99 to 100 area, and they are on what we call a solitary walk. Solitary walk means they've taken off, but nothing else has. For bond investors who are aggressive, I would be taking some capital gains here again and recycling that money and putting it into high-grade, AA, AAA corporate bonds, or the LQD ETF, which has maintained its trading range and looks to go from 105.81 here to 107 to 107.50 to 108. I think that's going to be an area that works really pretty well, and I'm concerned that this TLT is going to pull back all the way to 92, 91.50, which would be a fairly big drop in it from here. We've had some questions about whether we want to add short positions to bonds right here, and I still think there's an awful lot of shorts out there. I really don't see that rates are going to go up appreciably here. I do think that they have a chance of going up in the fall. In terms of the international markets, let's talk about the dollar right away, because right now the FXE, which is the euro, is trading above 120. That seems to be the key point on the euro. Note also, in the midweek report, we did that series on the SPY, or actually the SPX, the indexes, and the moving averages, and just go and take a look at that same 5-period and 20-period moving average on the FXE. that got you out of the FXC around 132, and it still is saying that the FXE is in a negative trend. I'm not going to get real bullish on this euro until those daily moving averages cross, although the indicators are very oversold. I think some more basing action is warranted here. The accumulation model on my FXE on the euro is still pretty positive, actually, saying we should be putting the brakes on here and making a little bit of a bottom in here. But I'm not going to actively pursue that until we see those moving averages cross. The yen does have a more positive configuration. If I were playing currencies, I'd still probably be buying the yen rather than the euro here. But there's signs that this drop in the euro is slowing and stopping and that there could be a relief rally, and I think that will help stocks a lot. Taking a look at gold, gold has had a nice little pullback after making a new high. We still really like the gold area. We still think gold is going to work through July, August anyway. Our accumulation model has detected a little bit more selling in gold, so the next really big correction in gold after some more rally is likely to be a more substantial one, and at that time hopefully we will have taken the last gold stock that we've had on our trading list off of our list. In terms of the BRIC countries, we've had some questions on things like Brazil. Brazil still looks like on the EWZ, you know, a lot of bottoming signs in the 58 to 60 area. That market is one of the more appealing of the BRICS. The Chinese market and the Indian market. India, fair amount of support in the 20 area, doesn't look as good. And the Chinese market, the FXI, oddly enough, does look like it's held support in the 38 area, basically with some plunges below there. But when you really look at the chart, we haven't been much below 38 except for like 2, 4, 5, 6, 7 days. We're back above it, so there's some good signs there as well. We continue to like the HAO, which is small caps. Right now, that doesn't look as good in China, but we're still hopeful for that, and so we like the looks of that. In terms of other commodities, natural gas still looks like it is trying to make a big bottom in here. We really need to stay above 780 on the UNG, and I know the UNG has got problems, but that corresponds to support on the nearby gas contract to be sure of that. And when I look at oil, oil seems to be holding on reasonably well as well, back above 34, which is a key area. We've had some stock questions, so I'm going to run through those very quickly. AUY on our list. The stock is still profitable versus where we put it on the list. We're trying to get rid of it in the, you know, 1140 area, as I recall. But I'd be willing to get rid of AUY almost any time. Resistance is 1150. Support is 975. Our stop is around 940. It's a long base. In terms of uptrends, it's the least attractive of the gold stocks. GG, our second uptrend, is a little bit more attractive in uptrend. Support is 39 to 40 and resistance is 46. Probably the most aggressive in terms of uptrends on the gold stocks is EGO. It's got support in the 15-16 area. Resistance is 18 to 20. We have DVN on our list. We are trying to sell it on this rally. We may have sold it. It looks like the stock traded up to 67.22 blast. My target to sell the stock is like 67.43. But we're profitable on DVN. It's come on the list around 64 and change. And again, anytime people want to sell that stock is fine. I have to pick a point on the list to sell it, but I want people to just make a profit on it, get rid of it, so that if the market comes down again, we're out of that stock. Chevron, CVX is a great-looking chart. Support on this stock is in the 70 area. It's held it. Longer-term support is probably 65, 66, so there are layers of support on that. Resistance is 80. I think it's the best stock on the board as far as oils are concerned. It's one that I like the looks of. We've commented off and on BP on this call. I think the last real discussion we got into was when the stock was at $50. Technically, this thing has got a huge amount of resistance now at 37, the prior support. We do not like this chart. I have no idea what this is going to do, but I keep asking myself what possible positive news other than plugging this oil leak can come out of that stock, and if unfortunately, they find that there's a lot of safety violations and just general violations, this company could be in real trouble. I would avoid the stock. Bank of America, support 1450 to 15. Holding on pretty well. Resistance is 1650 to 1750.
Okay.
We like Bank of America. BB&T, support is the 28 area. Resistance 30, and then 32, and then 34. It's probably our favorite bank. When the market finally looks like it's bottomed and we get a good buy signal, this is one of the ones we're probably going to go back into. U.S. Steel, trading extremely well given the way it's traded. It's down a lot. There's support in the 40 area and then 38. Resistance is around 50. This is one of those names that we would not mind accumulating here for a run later, but we want to be able to buy the stock lower should that happen, and that, for that matter, goes for all the stocks on this list that we've talked about today pretty much. T, telephone, resistance in the 25, 26, 27 area, support in the 23, 24 area, good defensive name, decent yield. With that, I'm going to pass the call over to Jeff Garbaz, see if there's any questions.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
Fine, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Good. Hey, I think one thing would be really useful for people is you have a very good understanding of futures and the futures market. If you could spend like maybe a couple minutes kind of giving a primer on it, because it seems like a lot of what's going on is there's a lot of the tail wagging the dog, so to speak, where all of a sudden futures start trading and then things just change direction. So can you kind of give everyone just a little kind of quickie update on how futures change and how how the futures market impacts stuff and what you see, et cetera?
Sure, okay. Well, in terms of the tail wagging the dog, obviously futures trade off the indexes, and there is what a commodity futures contract is made up of is basically the stock value of the underlying index or the value of the commodity plus interest rates plus what's called the cost of carry. So those costs can change, cost of carry and interest rate movements and currency movements can really affect them because people are using some of the futures to hedge currency movements. So when you see a big change in a currency quickly, that can screw up people's interest rate models and they'll just sell the future. So sometimes even those sales are not market related. Now there's another group of futures traders that will trade arbitrage based on the index. Basically, what you try to do on those type of trades is either buy all the stocks in the underlying index and then sell the futures contract, or in some cases buy the futures contract and sell all the stocks short. But the idea is simply to lock in an arbitrary rate of return, because when the futures contract goes to expiration, it will move together as cash to the cash price, and you'll collect that difference in premium. So that kind of arbitrage can also affect these markets. Again, people are buying and selling the futures for reasons unrelated to market direction. The other thing to remember about futures contracts, and this even includes the E-mini contracts, the electronic contracts, as well as the floor contracts, is that they are traded on sort of an open outcry system, i.e. there is no specialist, there is no central market maker in the futures. The prices are agreed upon in the pits and electronically between participants, so there is no central market maker regulating. So in big moves, you can get some very wild swings because they're trying to record prices all over the pit. In this case, also, one of the things that's been affecting the markets is the creation of ETFs. We've seen a lot more volume, for example, coming into the GLD ETF, so people have been buying some of the gold stocks just to put them, and gold, rather, physical gold, just to put it in the ETF. Did that answer your question, Jeff?
Yeah,
or was that
right.
More than anyone wanted to know?
It gives everyone kind of a great overview on that, so thanks for that. Next question for you is looking at corporates versus what's going on in the equity market. High yield seems to be getting hit a lot more than either LQD or CFT, which are kind of investment grade corporates. What are your thoughts there?
The high yield index, especially the HYG, is trading almost identical to stocks. Right now it actually looks a little bit stronger than stocks, but the high yield area is being seen as a prospect for risk. And, I mean, we'll have to see how this works out, Jeff, but the feeling seems to be that we've got a lot more bankruptcy and default risk coming out of Europe, and that's where the bad news is. I'm not so sure. Frankly, my doubt is that these countries are going to default, but given the kind of financial crisis we had last year and the year before with bankruptcies and defaults and all that in companies, I think people are looking kind of in the rearview mirror a little bit at that and are worried that each country, when it gets into a little bit of trouble, is going to simply declare bankruptcy. And I'm not so sure that's the case. I kind of doubt it, but that's the fear. And these high-yield bonds, since they are the highest yield, since they are the riskiest types of bonds, reflect that. If any bonds are going to default in America, it's going to be the high-yield ones first, most likely.
Great. Excellent. Next, the VIX. What are your thoughts here with the VIX, and specifically as it relates to how you look at stochastics?
Well, Jeff, I don't look that much at the VIX. I've never liked that as an indicator, but it seems to be moving pretty much. When I look at the VIX, it seems to be moving pretty much opposite stocks. And you know, I guess one of the questions, Jeff, and this is just an academic question. I don't use the stochastics on the VIX. The VIX is really not a freely traded market, if you know what I mean. It's more of an index or an indicator of option premiums. But the stochastics seem to work the same way, and I've got a number of people that have played things like the VXX, for example, and you know, those look tradable and okay. I wouldn't do it myself. In terms of the stochastics on the indexes, by the way, Jeff, we do have one interesting situation, and that is when I look at the S&P 500, when I look at the SPY, when I look at the mid-cap, when I look at the Russell, IWM, all of these indexes, the IWM is probably the only one that has done the classic on the daily charts, go below and above 20 to give a buy signal. The MDY, the SPY, none of that really has. I guess the MDY came close on the very last little dip, but I'm really waiting to see these stochastics on the weekly come down a little bit more. Okay, I may be waiting too long to try to buy this bottom here. It's very possible that I am, but I just look at the configuration of my moving averages and my other trend following indicators, and it just seems to me that when I get a really good buy signal, those trend-following indicators are in position to go positive very quickly after the stochastics give the buy signal. We're just not in that position right now, and that's what's making me wait.
Okay. One more kind of follow-on question related to what you just said before we open it up to calls. If we were to, say, look at SPY exactly like how you just looked at, like, IWM and some of the others, what seems to be interesting is the other corrections that we've had since, you know, we began the up phase in March of 2009, was we had kind of really sharp moves down that lasted, like, you know, less than a month typically. And you can see that, like, for the stochastic, you move below 20 and you kind of held there. And what's happened this time that kind of makes it look a little different is you had a lot of, like, hitting, like, 20 and kind of bouncing off of it, especially for, like, SPY. And you've had a much longer duration than these other corrections. What do you make of that? Like, how do you interpret that?
Jeff, I interpret that as being positive for the market, because what's happening is we're basically seeing the longer-term indicators correct, and in order to correct them, you need to have a little bit of a downtrend and choppiness in the short-term indicators. If we're going to have a very strong move up in the end of the year, and that's basically what I'm looking for, we're going to get a really good buying opportunity on the weekly and monthly indicators. So I'm looking at these daily indicators and seeing, and we've seen this before. We haven't seen it recently, but I've seen this in other markets over the last 25 years. We're going to have those daily indicators get down and really correct, and some time go by and get some more bearishness in this market before we can get a really good up move. That's, in other words, this is trading exactly the way it should be trading to set up for a very strong up move later in the year. There's nothing weird about it. And the need for this was when I was writing the the monthly last month, and in April talking about how we were at risk of the biggest correction in this bull market was basically the long-term stochastics had spent enough time on the weeklies above 80 that they almost had to start to come down, and that's why we're getting this, and that's why I was forecasting it.
Fantastic. Okay, that's great. At this point, I'm going to open it up to any questions. Remember, if you got a question for Fred, to hit star 6, and then you can ask away. So any questions for Fred right now? So if we don't have any right now, Fred, I'm going to ask one kind of further follow-up stochastic question for you.
Yeah.
If you again take SPY and you extend it from being daily to being weekly, we've just kind of hit 20, and if you look at like a weekly chart of SPY, it's pretty rare for it to come down and just hit 20 and instantly bounce off of it and all is well. Is that one of the reasons that you're kind of concerned about being able to hold like the 10, you know, 44 level, and that we have to go to a lower level?
Exactly, Jeff. That's the main reason, is that indicator will probably go up and then make another hook down and then start to hook up again, and that'll be the opportunity to buy, and that should take 3 or 4 weeks, which conveniently will also put the monthly indicators down a little bit. Jeff, when I look at the monthly stochastic, I note the fact that the monthly stochastic has finally gone below 80 and it's at 72. It may not go much lower, but if I could get that monthly stochastic down to 56 to 60, that would be so wonderful and would give us some real fuel for another solid rally to the upside. You know, one of the technical analyst diseases is you're looking for stuff to happen. You want to see the ideal thing happen and the ideal setup, and often you never get it. But we're getting close to where we could get at least three-quarters of the ideal setup, and I'm getting really excited about it. I'm just trying not to jump the gun on it.
Any more questions for Fred at this point? Have any of these?
Apple, Fred?
Hey, Julia. Which one? Apple?
Apple, thanks.
I've been a little bit nervous about Apple. My guess is the stock can rally here a little bit, say to 253, but what would be ideal would be a move on Apple. If I were to see Apple at 232, I am very excited and all over it. I think this is a great long-term uptrending chart. I think it's going to do really well, but I don't think it's quite bottomed yet. If you're an investor, you buy some here, you buy some around 231, 232 if it gets there.
Great. Any more questions for Fred?
Hey, Fred. Your voice, Jeff, in the background. How about potash? POT.
POT. Jeff, that's smoking today. I'm sorry. I get one bad joke per call. Everyone knows. Pot basically has got a fair amount of support in the 93-96 area. Jeff, a lot of resistance at 102, but if we can get through 102, 103, 104, my guess is, though, the stock is going to get close to 102, move back into the 95-96 area, and sort of trade around a bit. It does look like a bottom, and it does look like a fair amount of support in this area. The problem is if it gets much below 92, you're going to probably challenge 81, 82.
More questions for Fred?
About YGE.
YGE. Okay. Jeff, again, short-term bottom. Target is probably in the 1020 area short-term if it can get through 952, 953. A lot of support in the 8 to 840 area, and you know, its stochastic on the weekly is down below 20, so I'd be watching that carefully. When that weekly stochastic moves above 20, that's probably going to be a decent buy. And that can happen, Jeff, either through upside appreciation or some time, one of the two.
More questions for Fred?
RIM. It's not as attractive a chart as Apple is, but there's a fair amount of support at 58. If I were a long-term player, especially because technology remains one of my favorite sectors, if I could buy this stock, you know, in the 55 area on an average price basis, i.e. buy some here, if the stock trades down, if we really get whacked later in the month, this stock could make it to 48, 49. That would kind of be a surprise, but this is one that you could start to accumulate here. Ultimately, I think the stock can make it into the 72s, but it's not going to go there right away.
Yeah, Fred Butch, can you look at a couple of MLPs here?
Sure.
MWE and WES.
MWE first. That chart is surprisingly strong on the daily stuff. It looks decent. And on the weekly chart, Butch, there's no reason not to own this. This looks fine. I mean, your biggest area of support is in the 27-27.50 area. The only thing I can say is it's a little bit overbought, but in this market, that's good. And WES, Western Gas Partners.
Right.
This one looks a little bit worse, Butchie. If I could get this down to 1950, I would buy it. It doesn't look like something that's in danger of falling a whole bunch. And I know most people buy these for the yield and want to hold them. I'd hold off putting new money in this and see if we can get it down to 1950, but otherwise it's fine.
All right.
More questions for Fred? Hey, Fred, I'll kind of go back one last thing before we finish up. Back to this stochastic discussion that we were having.
Sure.
And obviously 2003 was an incredible year for stocks. It was kind of in a lot of ways similar to last year. You'd come through a bear market and you had a nice rebound, and then 2004 was kind of a very, you know, kind of wishy-washy back and forth type year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that, you know, monthly stochastic for 2004, we barely came below like the 80 level.
Right.
And now we've come much lower than what we did in 2004. Would the comparable setup historically be maybe 1998? Because it looks like in 98 you did have a really tough correction kind of mid-year. And then as that finished, that really launched us to much, much higher levels, you know, where we ultimately just ran straight up into 2000.
Exactly, Jeff. That's the sort of thing I'm looking at. The other key difference between here and 2003, let's look at that whole Fred Report chart that I use with the 5 and 20 moving averages and the stochastic.
Okay.
What's worth noting, Jeff, is the corrections in the stochastic basically occurred, but only after the moving averages went positive. Okay? And essentially, the bottom in that market was a double bottom, and the moving averages stayed negative to make a double bottom the whole time. And that was in the 2002-2003 time period. This market is actually a good bit stronger than that, because on this rally, the monthly moving averages have gone positive, and it's going to be very, very hard to get them to go negative again unless we have 6 or 7 down months in a row. So that tells me this is actually a stronger market, and it's just a question of how we buy it and how we get into it. Jeff, if we can get that stochastic, I'm looking at my chart here, roughly 64-65 on my stochastic on percent K, which is the fast line, would be enough to set it up, and that would get us down another month or so on the stochastic, which is why I've been using the end of July. The other thing that's important here is on my price oscillator, the Fred's price oscillator monthly, we hit plus 15 on that oscillator in September of 09 and October of 09. Those plus 15s are very rare. The last one occurred in 1983. The point is, when you hit plus 15 on that, you are in a bull market, but you can definitely correct. And we've corrected as of June down to minus 1. I'd like to see one more down month, i.e. July, in that, and then I think we're set to have a real bull move. And again, that's part of the technician's disease. Is a minus 1 enough to rally from? It could be. If we start seeing better-looking stuff, it will be. but ideally it will go down a little bit more. And I'm going to do my research report for the next monthly on that, by the way, Jeff, on that Fred's Price Oscillator, and show you all those dates and times.
So you really very much rely not only on the stochastic, but also the relationship of the 5 and 20, whatever period we're looking at it, whether it be daily, weekly, or like in this case how we're talking about it, on a monthly basis.
Absolutely, yeah, because that is the primary determinant of trend for me, is the long-term trend up or down. And as long as those moving averages are positive, the long-term trend is up. The other thing that I did not make this point well in the midweek, I feel I could have made it better, is when those daily moving averages go positive after this correction, whenever that is and whatever the price level on the S&P is, we're going to get a good run to the upside, just like we got from February to April, May. So I'm not particularly concerned here with catching the bottom, especially when I think the bottom could be lower than where we are now. I'll still get a good run when those moving averages go positive, so I'm much more inclined to wait till those moving averages are closer to going positive before I get in this market. And there's two ways those moving averages can get closer to going positive. One of them is to go sideways in a range from, say, 109.50 on the spider to 105, the range we're in now. We just go sideways for a few weeks, and they get ready to go positive. The other is a sharp correction followed by a rebound and then going sideways. That will get us down and also positive. But I'm really excited by the fact that from this configuration, and I've seen this before on all sorts of different charts ranging from 5-minute charts to monthly charts, when you get this configuration, when it goes positive, it's going to be a big move. The hard thing is to not jump the gun and say they're positive when they're not.
Fantastic. I think that about does it. One. Any more questions for Fred? Great. So, Fred, the last little kind of nuance of this, of what we've been talking about, is when you look at your monthly, and we're looking at like the S&P or the SPY, the 20 period, do you expect us to potentially hit that? Do we have to come down and potentially hit that 20 period moving average?
No, we don't. Not at all.
Okay, cool.
Not at all.
So
I'm anticipating that actually what this sort of sideways movement is going to cause, you can see the 20 period is already flattening out and turning up. This sideways movement will actually turn the 20 period up. And that's going to be even stronger looking when we start to go.
Right, which hasn't happened since basically back in 07, correct?
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. And the last time that 20 period turned up after a correction was between 03 and 04, and you basically got a run on the spiders then from 120 to 144.
And is it fair to say that like the really big moves in the market come when that 20 period on a monthly is actually the slope of it is positive and moving higher as opposed to just
absolutely
being flat?
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing that I think is also fair to say is if you go back and look at I hate to say any market at any time, but yeah, any market at any time, when you get really, really big moves, that 520 captures like 70% of them. Sometimes more, but very rarely less than 70%.
Excellent. Well, I think this has been a really good call because I think you've really been able to do a good job of communicating to people how to use some of the things that you really look at, and it should give people some pretty good clarity on the overall market. So I really appreciate you taking the time, and I think you did a really good job today.
Great. Thank you, and if there are, I guess, no further questions, we should probably wrap up the call. It's 10:49.
Exactly, so I'll let you wrap it up.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for participating. This will conclude the Fred Report call for June 10th, 2010. Thank you to everybody, and we'll talk to you all next week.